Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth along with Logan Rausch, also Paul Perreault, and special thanks to Rachel Sutton for putting our show together today. Good morning, Logan. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Dick. How are you this morning?
How many innings of the All-Star game did you watch?
Well, I don't quite have a cable plan, so what's lower than one?
Well, I made it about three innings. It was 2-1 when I went to bed. And my goodness, it ended up American League All-Stars. They won 8-6 in 10 innings, and there were 10 home runs in the game. Crazy game. It was more like the home run derby than an actual baseball game. So if you made it to the end and you're up this early, congratulations. That's very good of you, and you're probably needing extra caffeine this morning. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to be talking to Drew Griffin. I believe this is the first time we've had the opportunity to talk to Drew. He's the managing editor of Providence Magazine, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the magazine. But more importantly, it's really a Christian worldview, and specifically in foreign relations and those kinds of things. So there's a lot to talk about this morning. The second half of this hour, we're going to be talking to Ashley Chestnut. Ashley works with 20s and 30s in her church. She's written an article about loneliness, especially among that age group. And all day today, we are introducing a new thing. This is a thing, texting. Have you heard of that?
I've done it once or twice. Peter told me to stop texting him, actually.
Is that right? Well, here it is. Rather, you can either call or text us today at 877-933-2484. So if you have a question for Drew Griffin during our time with Drew or with Ashley Chestnut, again, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. Faith Radio Mornings will be back in a moment with Drew Griffin. Stay with us. We're 8 past the hour. Drew Griffin, he is the managing editor of Providence Magazine, is our guest today. And Drew, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
Thank you, Dick. It's good to be with you this morning.
Drew, before we get too far into the interview, tell me a little bit about yourself and also the magazine.
Sure. I recently came on board as a managing editor. I've been involved in politics and religion over the last 20 years, the first half of that 20 years in politics, the last half in religion and theology. I was a consultant and political operative on a number of campaigns in the first decade of the 2000s, and then went to seminary to get my degree in theology, and came up here to New York City to plant a church, and got involved in writing and editing along the way, and came along with Providence. Providence started in 2015. It's a journal of American of Christianity and American foreign policy that we try to provide context and clarity and conviction on the issues facing Christians in the world stage, and that's a little bit about us.
All right, that's excellent, and it's ProvidenceMagazine.com. What is the website?
Yeah, it's ProvidenceMag.com.
Okay, ProvidenceMag.com. Big question today, are you a National League or an American League fan?
Well, I'm a Yankees guy.
Okay,
so
well.
That's my team.
You were on the couch shouting with Aaron Judge up to bat, right?
You know, I would have if I hadn't been on a plane. So I was denied the ability to cheer last night.
Well, that's it was solely the American leagues. It took 10 inning, and I'm pleased with my National League family that they at least came back in the ninth and tied things up. But let's move along. A lot to talk about, as you well know, and certainly appreciate your time today as we delve into some things that just escape me continually. Kind of give us your view from your perspective, from Providence Magazine's perspective, of the recent European trip to NATO, to the United Kingdom and Helsinki. How would you grade President Trump?
Well, we have a position at Providence where we really try and take as much of a middle ground as possible. There are a number of voices on the far left and on the far right that will criticize everything that Donald Trump does and or praise everything that he does. So our kind of editorial policy is just basically to go to your kind of baseball analogy is called balls, balls, and strikes, strikes. And when we look at Trump's performance in the NATO summit, I have to say there may have been a few more strikes than balls. It seemed to follow the familiar pattern of his engagement on the world stage, which is to, for reasons passing understanding, criticize allies needlessly to really no, it seems like, effective purpose other than to lob criticism, to continue to isolate the United States, which I think we saw as he seemed to kind of pull away through his criticism. And I think particularly as he moves from NATO into Great Britain, where I believe he kind of greatly got involved in the internal affairs of that nation by criticizing Theresa May, I think damaging one of the closest alliances that we have with Great Britain. The question that we would have, I think, at Providence, I think it's a question on a lot of people's minds, is exactly what is his end game? Like, what's the goal? What's the vision here other than continuing to isolate the United States and providing, I think, a giant open door for other powers, as we saw the European Union shining an economic agreement yesterday with Japan. We saw we see Russia continue to kind of step up and step into the void. So our we have criticism and questions, much like a lot of people.
Yeah, I think most everybody. I do think that there are many of us that do love his rather unique style and approach. I mean, I think he's done some things that would. Like meet with Kim and the Chinese president and things like that that we really should be doing more of, and yet he is kind of a bull in a china shop, correct?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that there's a tension here that exists among a lot of people who view the kind of slow-moving lethargy that exists on the world stage and exists in foreign policy and wants to see some change and some movement. You know, we've had a number of issues, whether it's North Korea, whether it's Russia, whether it's Syria, whether it's Iran, that have remained relatively stagnant for decades, if not longer. And so there's this pressure that builds up. Can't somebody break the logjam? Can somebody be the guy who can finally shake things up? And I think that tension is understandable. I think the problem comes in the way in which we engage, in the way in which we change. Sometimes that lethargy, sometimes that apparent lack of action, there are reasons behind it. And it's because there are complex issues, and it's a very delicate system. And I think it goes to how you view the world. If you view the world as in an atomistic way, right, in the terms of it being an isolated case-by-case basis, then you can kind of go in and say, well, I'm going to go to North Korea, and I'm going to talk to Kim and do something no one's ever done before. I'm going to move, you know, the embassy in Jerusalem and do something that no one's been willing to do yet. I'm going to meet with Putin one-on-one, and, you know, that's something that is without much of an agenda, and that's something no one's done yet. And in isolation, you could look at these instances and say, oh, you know, that's good. We should be doing that. But the problem is that the world isn't isolated. It's not a case-by-case basis. It's an interconnected web of relationships and dynamics. And part of diplomacy is understanding and reading that web and recognizing that a decision made over here on your left is going to affect something over here on your right. And when you start moving the pieces around the board, the entire game begins to change. And that's why sometimes there's a tendency with people within foreign policy and in diplomacy to be more measured. And that may be frustrating to some. But I think that measured response is often necessary because the world is a connected and complex place.
Yeah, I do believe that he is one who loves momentum And he makes things happen. In so when things aren't happening, he has a tendency to try to push things around. But there are certainly cascading events and circumstances and consequences. Drew Griffin is my guest this half hour. We really appreciate Drew coming on Faith Radio Mornings. He's the managing editor of Providence Magazine. And by the way, we'd love to hear from you today. If you have a question or a comment for Drew, we'd love to hear from you. You can text or call at 877-933-2484. Text or call 877-933-2484. We'll be back with more of Faith Radio Mornings in just a minute. We're 18 minutes past the hour. My guest is Drew Griffin, managing editor of Providence Magazine. We're going to be taking your questions and comments in just a moment at 877-933-2484. I'm Dick Whitworth, filling in for Peter Kapsner this week on Faith Radio Mornings. By the way, today is the final day to sign up for the free online course sponsored by Faith Radio and the University of Northwestern. It is on the life of Christ. Visit our website, myfaithradio.com, for more information, and we'd be happy to sign you up. Today, though, is the final day to register. The course begins on July 23, so thank you. It's only 6 weeks. It's a great course. Hope you'll take a part of that. Well, Drew, thank you again for your time. It's really great to meet you. Love having you on and sharing your perspective. I want you to react to something that President Trump said. He was, of course, trying to defend his actions at the press conference with Putin. Please react to this.
I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia.
How do you respond to that?
I think there are two things that come to mind. One is that I would say it's a criticism and then a concern. The first is that changing that one word would not have changed the tone of the overall conference. I mean, I should say that one word would have stuck out, tremendously had he changed it, because the entire tone and tenor of the conference was one in which he seemed to be upbeat. He seemed to be optimistic. He seemed to be profuse in his praise of Russia and their relations. And it would have changing that one word would have gone against, it seemed like, whatever everything else that he said during the conference. So I'm skeptical as to the kind of damage control that's being done. And this is part of the reason why I mentioned earlier that, you know, foreign relations. Diplomacy is a complex and precise business. And one of the reasons why you have advisors, one of the reasons why, you know, even presidents who are well-schooled in this, and I think it's obvious that Trump is not, have huge staffs that can inform them and remind them of things, and why any joint meeting between leaders typically is planned out in advance word for word is because words matter greatly. And we have a president who seems to have a loose relationship with consistency when it comes to words, which I think is troubling. So that's my criticism. Is I don't quite believe that is that was actually a misspeak, because the whole tone of the conference was one of kind of that affirmed his original statement. The second is a criticism in just saying, like, when he's going into a one-on-one meeting with Vladimir Putin, with no one present other than translators. Putin walks into that meeting, as we could see, with a notepad. He seems to be, you know, prepared. Trump seems to just walk into the meeting. There's no one to take a record of it. There's no one to provide any kind of record back to the U.S. government, let alone the U.S. people. And so one would ask the question, if he's going to misspeak in front of cameras and in front of the world, how do we know he didn't misspeak in private? And I think that that's a valid concern that needs to be raised, and perhaps even stipulated that he not meet in private again without someone there to have some sort of record or accountability.
Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, and let me step back just a second. And for those of you who may not have understood the context of that comment, that was President Trump yesterday trying to clarify his remarks he made about Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. election. Earl from Asante just texted a moment or so ago, and he said, "I just wish once he would admit that he made a mistake. Saying he misspoke is not the same as admitting a mistake." And it's ironic, we actually have that misspoke statement from President Trump from yesterday's press conference. So this is our second actuality.
I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place.
So is Earl right? Is it just misspeaking, or is it the same as did he admit a mistake?
I don't hear him admitting mistake, and I think the problem is that this was not a novel concept, and this wasn't a novel question that he was asked during this press conference. It's a question that he's been asked over and over again over the last 18 months. As the investigation has was begun and continued into Russian meddling and the briefings that he's had, I think the crux of the matter, the real difficulty that many of us have with what happened in Helsinki, is that he himself laid out a case for the fact that it probably isn't Russia. He said, I've heard from all of my intelligence agencies, but I've also heard from Putin. Putin was very strong. Putin was very convincing. Putin was very, you know, robust. So I can't believe it would be Russia. I mean, he kind of closing arguments kind of laid out this case, and it is not as if, like I said, this is a novel concept. We hadn't faced this question before. We've seen this often, whether it's with Charlottesville or whether it's with the relationship with Canada or Mexico or any other nation, is that he'll say something and kind of go out on a limb, face massive criticism for it, and come back and say, well, you know, I didn't really say it, or I said it differently, or the fake media didn't quite report it correctly. And so I would be a little skeptical, and I don't hear necessarily an apology.
Do you think he recovers? I heard even Newt Gingrich say that this may be the worst mistake of his presidency.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I used to think that he would go a bridge too far, but he keeps crossing these bridges and keeps going. I think that there's a certain segment of the public out there that will probably support him no matter what he does. I do think, though, that among the establishment, and not only the establishment, but just the general framework of the United States, this was an opportunity that the president had to face a geopolitical foe and to do so with clarity and to do so with conviction. And instead of doing that, in which it would have cost him nothing to stand up to Putin domestically, it would, in fact, I think, would have been a positive had
sure.
he said that Russia was to blame. Instead of doing that, he took that moment and kind of whiffed at the ball. And I think that he did so intentionally. And I think that the establishment, and I think even some of his more strident supporters are saying, you know, why didn't you stand up for America? Why didn't you stand up against this foe?
Yeah, that's. I think you're so right. Drew Griffin, managing editor of Providence Magazine, is my guest today. Drew, we don't have time to get into it, but you wrote an editorial, you among the editors, The American Goals for the Trump-Putin Summit. I thought it was a fascinating article, and obviously we don't know what went on in the meeting, unfortunately. Is there any one of the six or seven goals that you felt were the most important to be accomplished? And by the way, you can find the article at providencemag.com. Is one outshining the others?
I think what I would hope is number two, the second statement that we had is that Putin, you know, should understand that America will sustain its commitments to the Baltics, you know, with or without NATO involvement. Looking at you know, America's presence in Europe as being immovable and as a check to Russian power. What I would hope is that out of this, that there was an understanding that Putin walked away with an understanding that the United States was committed to the European theater, and that wasn't leaving an opening for continued Russian aggression. I'm doubtful, based off of the press conference that we heard yesterday, that kind of message was communicated. And I'm also doubtful, based off of what occurred at the NATO summit beforehand. But I think we, as the United States, need to be ever present in Europe and to push back against President Trump. It's not for European interests. It's for ours. You know, we form these international agreements because it's offense is the best defense, and it's best to erect a bulwark in Europe than walls on our own border. And so we need to remain committed. So that's what I would hope, is that a continued commitment and a strong commitment by the U.S., and that was communicated to Russia, but I'm doubtful.
All right. Drew Griffin, managing editor of Providence Magazine. Drew, I hope you'll come back. You did a great job. It was really great getting acquainted with you. I hope we can do this again.
Thanks, Dick. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a good morning.
You as well. All right. We're going to take a short break. Lighten Up coming up in just a moment or two. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. It's 28 past the hour. 31 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining us. Coming up after the news, we're going to be talking to Ashley Chestnut. She's an associate singles 2030s minister. She's a member of Brook Hills Church. We're going to be talking about an article she wrote on loneliness. But an interesting fact about Ashley, she can look at a chicken and tell how many eggs it has laid. And actually, she won a national contest for this great skill and ability, Logan. Can you do something like that?
I don't even have words. I cannot think of a witty response to that.
I am going to ask her about that and so much more when Faith Radio Mornings continues. We're 36 past the hour. By the way, thanks to Dale from Fargo for your kind words. Great to hear from you this morning, Dale. Appreciate your text comment. Ashley Chestnut will be joining us in a moment or two. We're going to be talking about loneliness. If you have a question or a comment for Ashley, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. Derwin Gray, who is a former NFL football player, pastor, and now author, says he believes that many people are struggling with identity issues and life struggles due to a heart issue.
Even within the church, particularly as Americans, we're so busy with doing and trying to build that we neglect what's most important is our hearts. So when I say hearts, I mean the whole person. And, you know, Jesus said it's not what's out there that defiles a man, it's the heart. And so he was the world's first true psychologist, and I'm going to deal with your heart, I'm going to deal with your soul, and I'm going to give you a new one. Slow down and let me do it, because out of the abundance of the heart is how we live. And we often try to paint over an old barn versus allowing Jesus to reconstruct an entire new house.
Derwin Gray, he's pastor and author. You can find out the entirety of the interview at our website, myfaithradio.com. Click on the search bar and type in Derwin Gray or God-given identity. We'll have more of Faith Radio Mornings in just a moment.
The Word of God is self-evident truth. It doesn't need us to defend it. Rather, we must proclaim it. This is Jim Garlow. Psalm 33:12 said, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." Allow me a Garlow paraphrase, if I might. If we want to see America thrive politically, morally, economically, or any other way, we'll have to be well-versed, that is, learning how to apply spiritual truths from the Word of God. Because the Word of God has the answers for a nation adrift in the anti-biblical culture in which we find ourselves that can't even discern evil from good. My prayer is that God would raise up a bold people who will proclaim biblical truth to power and take captive every unbelieving thought and make it obedient to Christ, the source of all wisdom. Bottom line, if you're well-versed in biblical ways, people will have a reason to listen to you. Get the details at jimgarlow.com.
We're 39 minutes past the hour. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's Faith Radio Mornings. Peter Kapsner will be back next week. In the meantime, thanks again to Logan Rausch, Paul Perot, and Rachel Sutton for all of their help in making this show come to life, including, well, inviting special guests like Ashley Chestnut. Ashley is joining us today. She's a member of Brook Hills Church. She is the Associate Singles 20 and 30s Minister. She's written an article on loneliness. And she can look at a chicken and tell how many eggs it has laid. She even won a national contest for this in 2003. Ashley, you come with incredible credentials, but everyone is interested in knowing how can you look at a chicken and tell how many eggs.
And the fact that you led with that, okay. yes.
Well, so. I teased with that. That's why we that's why we set it up that way.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, yes. So chickens, as they lay eggs, they lose color in certain parts of their body in a particular order. So if you know the order in which they lose pigment, then you can have a good estimate of how many eggs they've laid. And then you can also feel their abdomen, and the wider and the more pliable their abdomen is, the more eggs they've laid as well. So between the intensity, which is their abdominal capacity, and the persistency, which is the pigment loss, you can know how many eggs a chicken has laid.
That is amazing. My producer, Logan Rausch, said, you obviously were in FFA, correct?
4-H, and there is 4-H. A big difference.
Yes, there is. That is true. Well, Ashley, you have you've set the bar very high. I don't know what the rest of your credentials are per se, but you've impressed all of us. Take just a moment. Tell us a little bit about who you are truly and what your ministry is like at Brook Hills. And where is Brook Hills located?
Yes, so the Church of Brook Hills, it is located in Birmingham, Alabama, and I've been on staff there close to 8 years, and I've had a couple of different roles on the staff, but now I am the Associate Singles Minister for the 20-30s age group. So I deal mostly with the girls in that demographic, and I do some counseling, but I also oversee our small groups for that age group and for the girls in that age group. So, and we have close to 400 singles, 20-30s in our congregation. Birmingham's a young city, so our demographic tends to be younger anyway, but because of all the colleges in the area, just a younger demographic. So that's the group that I get to work with, and it's a pleasure.
Well, it sounds like you enjoy your work. You talked about, you wrote an article entitled Three Unhealthy Responses to Loneliness. Is that pervasive? Is loneliness a problem primarily in that age group, or do you think it's just a problem in general?
I definitely think it's a problem in general. I mean, loneliness is something anybody, no matter their age or life stage, can and probably does experience. I mean, we've all probably experienced loneliness at some point in our life. But I do think with singleness, there is a unique situation there that maybe it's acknowledged more or talked about more. So I think it's a both and. I think it's a problem that many people experience, not just singles.
It seems that we're the most connected society ever, and yet loneliness is a topic of concern, right?
We are more connected, but our in-person interactions are decreasing. So we are spending more time on social media and on our smartphones, but we're spending less time interacting with people in person. And I actually, I've been doing some research on iGen, which is the generation below millennials. And actually, mental health issues are increasing with the younger generation, but loneliness has increased with the younger generation. And the statistics and the research I'm doing is showing that a lot of that has to do with how much time they're spending socially connecting online rather than offline. So I do think that our social media use and our time on our technology is taking away from in-person interactions, which their fear of missing out is part of that. The comparison feeds into that. And just less time with people in person feeds into that.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth. My guest today is Ashley Chesnut. She is an Associate Singles 2030s minister. She has her MDiv from Beeson Divinity School in from Birmingham. Actually, you're a Georgia native, correct?
I am. Yes, go dogs.
Okay. If you have a question or a comment for Ashley, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We'd love to hear from you. And maybe you have a young person that is going through a season of loneliness and you'd like some encouragement or advice on how to encourage them, or perhaps you yourself are having some challenges with feeling or being lonely. Well, let's talk about some unhealthy responses. You kind of go at it from the negative. So one of the unhealthy responses to being lonely is ignoring the why. Can you elaborate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So every emotion that we feel, there is a thought or a belief behind the emotion. So we feel the way we do because we think the way that we do. And so often, instead of actually addressing or acknowledging why we feel that way, we tend to stuff it or ignore it or act in other unhealthy ways. And so part of dealing with any negative emotion or uncomfortable emotion is actually looking at, why do I feel that way to begin with? And what does that indicate about my beliefs about myself, my beliefs about God, my beliefs about other people? And are those beliefs based on truth or not? And if they're not based on truth, then we need to address it with what is true.
It's hard to self-diagnosis, is it not?
Oh, it is. And it takes time and reflection. And more often than not, we would rather wallow in the emotion and you know, be like, oh, woe is me, rather than actually do the hard work of reflection on why we feel the way we do.
Okay. Ashley Chesnut is our guest. We're going to be taking a short break here in just a moment. A reminder, today is the final day to sign up for the online course, The Life of Christ. It's free. It's taught by University of Northwestern professor Melissa Larson. It's a 6-week course that we would love to have you participate in. Space is limited, so we hope you'll sign up today at myfaithradio.com. We'll be back with more with Ashley after this on Faith Radio Mornings. We're 49 minutes past the hour. We're talking today with Ashley Chesnut on Faith Radio Mornings. Ashley is a staff member of Brook Hills Church. He's actually the associate singles pastor, the 20s and 30s groups, primarily focused on the ladies, but she's also just very active in her church with small groups. And we're talking about an article that she wrote on three unhealthy responses to loneliness, and exploring that with Ashley today. If you have a question or a comment, you can call or text us today at 877-933-2484. We talked a little bit about ignoring the why. You say that there's some unhealthy coping mechanisms, and if we want to have, it's a response, it's an unhealthy response to embrace unhealthy coping mechanisms. Kind of give us an overview. Talk a little bit about that.
About the unhealthy coping mechanisms or
please.
About healthy ones?
Well, either one, however you would like to take it, because we don't want to be unhealthy.
Yes. Well, let me focus some on the healthy responses.
That would be great.
So definitely, like I said earlier, you want to identify, why am I feeling this way? What are the beliefs? What are the thoughts behind the emotion? But we also need to remind ourselves of what is true. And that's where we need to go back to God's word. God's word, the Bible, is our plumb line for truth. So just because we feel something doesn't mean it's actually true. We have to line up our emotions and examine them against the word of God. And the truth is, I am never alone. God is always with me. And we need to remind ourselves of that truth. We also need to remember that God knows exactly how we feel, and he felt loneliness. I mean, we see that with Christ on the cross. And we also need to know that none of our emotions, none of our situations are wasted. And so anytime we have loneliness, we also need to see, is there something that I should be doing with my loneliness? It builds compassion in us, or it should build compassion in us. If I feel lonely, I should be more sensitive and compassionate to those around me that might also be feeling lonely. Am I reaching out? Am I allowing my loneliness to build compassion? And am I leveraging that for the sake of the kingdom, to where I am serving others in our faith family, in our community that might also feel that way? And then there's also just the simple aspect of, if I feel lonely, well, am I being intentional in building relationships with people around me in person, not just online? So there's all of that. Those are healthy ways to deal with the negative emotion.
Well, appreciate, helping us focus on that. Your small groups, I would assume, would be an antidote for loneliness. Certainly, people helping people within small groups. Is that something you emphasize?
I would say the focus isn't necessarily to address loneliness. The purpose of our small groups is to help one another grow in our relationship with God and to partner with each other as we share the gospel. But community is a byproduct of being on mission together. So community is not the goal, but community is a byproduct of working together towards a common goal. And so I would definitely say for those that are connected to a local church and aren't just attending as spectators, but that are actually plugging in and serving one another and serving outside the walls of the church too, you will find that, yes, you will still feel lonely in your life. It's not going to necessarily mean that you never feel that emotion, but it does mean that you are living your life on purpose, and you recognize that even loneliness can serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. And again, God does not waste our emotions, and God does not waste our experiences.
You used an illustration in your article about when loneliness can't be fixed, or at least fixed easily. And you talked a little bit about how God can turn that into something beautiful. Can you share that illustration, that story?
Yes, and this is not original. So this is from Elizabeth Elliot's book, The Path of Loneliness, which it's one that I highly recommend if you feel lonely. And it's not necessarily a book on loneliness. It's a book on the cost of following Jesus and what that can mean. But here's the quote that she gives. She says, "Our loneliness cannot always be fixed, but it can always be accepted as the very will of God for right now. And that turns it into something beautiful. Perhaps it is like the field wherein lies the valuable treasure. We must buy the field. It is no sun-drenched meadow embroidered with wildflowers. It is a bleak and empty place. But once we know it contains a jewel, the whole picture changes. The empty scrap of forgotten land suddenly teems with possibilities. And when, through a willed act, we receive this thing we did not want, then loneliness, the name of the hidden field nobody wants, is transformed into a place of hidden treasure."
Wow, that's powerful. Ashley Chestnut, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate the opportunity to get to know you. Thank you for writing the article. Trust that you have a great day and week, and God bless you in your ministry.
Thank you, Dick. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. God bless you. It is 55 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of Faith Radio Mornings in a moment. 56 past the hour. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's Faith Radio Mornings on this Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in. Coming up after the news at the top of the hour, our dear friend Bill English, founder of BibleAndBusiness.com. He's a consultant, has written an article that we're going to be talking a little bit about today. It's entitled "The Lesson of Forgiveness. Feuds Are Costlier Than Forgiveness." And it appeared actually in the St. Paul BizJournals.com, Twin Cities Review Action. And so it's going to be an interesting conversation. As always, if you have a question or a comment for Bill, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. He'll be happy to respond to those questions and comments. and looking forward to that. I do want to take just a moment, and Logan, I think we talked about this for a moment. The Culvers in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, in the Madison area, hats off to them today, and encourage you to actually stop by there if you live in the Madison area. They're reaching out to help the community move forward after that tragic explosion not too many days ago. The restaurant is donating 50% of yesterday's sales to the Barr and Welch families. Captain Corey Barr was killed when a gas main leak downtown led to an explosion. And actually, firefighter Ryan Welch was critically injured in that explosion as well. Barr's wife, Abby, stopped in at the restaurant to have lunch with the Sun Prairie firefighters. And this actually took place yesterday, but kudos to them. I think that's a great community service. And how proud partners to be with Culver's.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, for a hometown Wisconsin fast food place, it is so wonderful. I already love their food, but just another reason to love them. I mean, that is such a heartfelt and meaningful thing to do for your community, and they don't have to do that. Culver's is a big business. You know, they have chains all over the place. This doesn't feel like that local of a place, but they really stepped up and they said, we care about this community. We are so sorry for your loss, and we are incredibly humbled by this sacrifice that he made. And I am just in awe that they would be willing to do something like this.
Well, so many hometown heroes, the firefighters and the police and the first responders that were a part of that tragic explosion. But you got to say Culver's is a hometown hero in Sun Prairie. So God bless all of them and for their great efforts. We'll be back with more of Faith Radio Mornings in just a few moments. The news at the top of the hour. Then our good friend Bill English will be joining us. Stay with us.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.